Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. The Netherlands says it expelled four Russian military intelligence agents after disrupting a plot to target the global chemical weapons watchdog, the OPCW. The GRU operation allegedly targeted the OPCW at The Hague in April. The watchdog has been looking into the Salisbury nerve agent attack in March, which the UK says was also carried out by Russia's GRU. The UK has also set out claims of a series of major international cyber attacks it says Moscow was responsible for. Russia denies the allegations. US senators are looking through an FBI report into claims of sexual misconduct made by Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. He denies allegations made by a series of women, and the details of the FBI findings are not due to be made public. An international aid effort's gearing up to help people in Indonesia hit by the devastating earthquake and tsunami that's killed at least 1,400 people. Bruce Harrison is on the island of Sulawesi.
That golden window of finding survivors trapped beneath a building is rapidly closing, if it's not already closed. Unfortunately, for many of the people trapped beneath some of the collapsed buildings and other infrastructure within this city, they were flooded over by the tsunami, so it's unlikely they'll find people alive in those spots. There are spots like the Roa Roa Hotel in downtown Palu, where President Joko Widodo recently said it's still believed 30 people are trapped within that rubble.
Russian President Vladimir Putin will be in India for a two-day official visit where he and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi are expected to sign a $5 billion deal for S-400 surface-to-air missiles. But the US State Department's issued a warning, as Neha Punia reports.
As New Delhi prepares for that crucial meeting between Prime Minister Modi and Russian President Vladimir Putin on Friday, the United States has once again reiterated that any significant defense transaction with Moscow could invite sanctions for India. Sources in the External Affairs Ministry say that they see the S-400 missile deal as one that is still being negotiated, and that any response to America's warning will be issued after President Putin's visit ends. India's military is pushing for the missile purchase as a deterrent against China and to gain an edge over traditional rival Pakistan.
Meanwhile, India's rupee has fallen to another record low against the US dollar, which is becoming a growing area of concern for the government. From FSN Mumbai, Rebecca Bundon reports.
The Indian rupee has been tumbling to a series of all-time lows against the US dollar in recent weeks, and it is now headed towards a 74 mark for the first time. India's government and the central bank have been trying to support the rupee with measures including import duty hikes, but the currency has continued to slide, along with other emerging market currencies, as the dollar strengthens. The weakness of the rupee is adding to the cost of imported goods such as oil, pushing fuel prices higher, which affects the Indian population.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks, Ollie. Thank you very much. Thursday, October 4th, 2018. How you doing? Have you had a good Thursday? Hope you're well. I'm Richie Allen. Who else would it be? Welcome back to the programme.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show. It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now you can tweet me as usual. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Send me a tweet. Please don't leave me here all alone. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Coming up, Pippa King. What a wonderful woman Pippa King is. Biometrics in schools. Had a very interesting conversation with Pippa around about 2 hours ago. Recorded that. We'll bring it to you very soon. And in the second hour of the programme, the host of the original podcast, the first independent media, the first independent news podcast on the internet, the great Maria Heller of mariaheller.net, joins the program for the first time in ages. She's live from Arizona, and we're going to have a very interesting conversation about Donald J. Trump, the President of the United States of America. Maria Heller in the second hour. If you've got anything to complain about, there's something you don't like, if there's something you hear that you don't like, just send me a tweet and I will read it out in the interest of balance. It's Thursday's program. Let's get rid of the music. Yeah, you're right. Hey, by the way, I'm not as bad as I thought it would be. I was a bit pessimistic yesterday because I was sneezing all day. I had a runny nose all day. And I thought, oh, here it comes now. The laryngitis and the lurgy and the throat and all the rest of it. No, none of it. I'm all right. I'm not going to be ill, which is good. All good. Right, tomorrow, by the way, I'll have a live programme for you at 1 p.m. UK time in lieu of my absence on Monday. It'll be a 90-minute programme tomorrow, Friday, at 1 p.m. UK time. And I'll be joined by Mark Windows, top man. Terrific journalist and great researcher is Mark. He'll be on with me tomorrow at lunchtime UK time. All right? All righty. Well, there's only one story today that, well, they're all talking about, and it's the Russians again! Ah, the Russians. Well, what have they been up to this time? It's almost pantomime stuff. This voluminous crap from the UK and European media. What are the Russians being blamed for now? Over to Kay Burley. Go on, Kay. Go on, Kay. What have the Russians done? What have they done?
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon,
Kay. Russia's facing international condemnation today after Western spies uncovered a complex plot to target global institutions with cyber attacks.
Western spies! The fecking irony in the first line of it. Okay. Kay says, Western spies have uncovered a sophisticated plot. Anyway, I won't interrupt much more of it. You could choke on the irony. Have a listen. What have the Russians done? What have they done? What have they done?
Foreign Secretary has warned there will be consequences after Dutch intelligence said it had prevented an attack on the OPCW, the international watchdog probing the Salisbury nerve agent attack. They've released this photo, which they say shows the four suspects arriving at Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam in April. They'd flown from Moscow on diplomatic passports and were met by a Russian embassy official. The Netherlands says the men were working for the Russian Military Intelligence Service, the GRU, and were expelled as soon as the operation was uncovered. They're alleged to have used a Wi-Fi antenna and technical equipment in their car to try to hack the network.
They had this little Citroën car and they had an antenna on it and they had equipment inside the car, and doing that they were going to bring down the investigations into everything that was being investigated about Russia. It's funny stuff, isn't it? It's stand-up comedy. Kay Burley for the Edinburgh Fringe next year. Oh, it's great stuff, this. Let's just hear about the car again, because you can't beat this.
They're alleged to have used a Wi-Fi antenna and technical equipment in their car.
In a little Citroën. I think it was, anyway. Am I wrong to say Citroën? Was it something else? I saw a photograph, and it looked like a Citroën to me. Christ, these Russians are amazing, huh? Brilliant.
...to hack the network of the OPCW as it investigated the Salisbury attack. Britain's ambassador to the Netherlands...
Yeah, so they drove up outside the offices of the OPCW in this shitty little car with an antenna on it. And there's a couple of Russians in the back seat with a laptop. Well, we will show them. Da. Yeah. This is just great stuff, you know.
Said the GRU had also attempted to hack the UK Foreign Office and the Porton Down Chemical Weapons Lab, which first tested samples from Salisbury.
In March, straight after the Salisbury attack, the GRU attempted to compromise UK Foreign and Commonwealth Office computer systems via a spear phishing attack.
Spear phishing attack?
In April, GRU intrusions targeted both the computers of the UK Defence and Science Technology Laboratory, as well as the Organisation for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons.
Yeah, let's just stop him there. That's Peter Wilson, the UK ambassador to the Netherlands, spinning a wild and wondrous story that even Hans Christian Andersen would have been proud of. What a fairy tale. The Russians in their little car with the Wi-Fi antenna sticking out of it rocked up to the offices of the OPCW. It's rubbish. How do you know, Richie? Truthfully, I don't. I don't know for a fact it's rubbish. But I can't keep believing these liars. At some stage, you've got to say, nah. You've lied to me every other time about every other thing. So today, I'm just not going to believe you. Anyway, Jeremy Hunt got a mention from Kay. He's the UK Foreign Secretary, the guy who wrecked the health service. That's what they do with these lunatics. They wreck one aspect of public life, and then they're given another job to the left or to the right of that position. He's the foreign secretary. He's a tough guy. He's threatening the Russians. What are you going to do about it, Jeremy?
But we don't want any kind of escalation.
I thought he was talking tough, but apparently he doesn't want any kind of escalation.
The way that we are going to prevent an escalation is by making sure when this kind of thing happens that Russia knows that it's a red line, that there are consequences, that the price is going to be too high, and that if they think they can get away with flouting international law, trying to destabilise the way democracies go about their business.
You can sing along with this, by the way. This is a script that has been rinsed and repeated by every other gormless fucking goon like him for the last few years, since the Russians said, no, we're not going to let you sack Syria. The script is the same, destabilise. We're not going to allow Russia flout international law, destabilise. You can sing along with it. It must be embedded in your consciousness now.
Sending agents in to use chemical weapons on British soil for the first time in our history. If they think that we're just going to lie down and accept that, they're wrong. And there will be consequences and they will regret doing this.
Yeah, the Russians are going to regret it. Now, this lady here, I don't know if she's a lady, this woman, shouldn't call her a lady, is a Russian foreign ministry spokeswoman, and her name is, I think it's Maria Zakharova. Yeah, Maria Zakharova. Here she is with the Russian official response to the latest accusation against Russia itself.
Indiscriminately, in one vial, maybe Nina Ricci fragrance vial, everything was mixed up. GRU, cyber spies, Kremlin's hackers, WADA. What an infernal perfume mix. The vivid imagination of our colleagues from the UK has no boundaries indeed. Who comes up with all this? I'd like to look at these people. They are just Andersons. Probably they judge by themselves and describe what they usually do. You know.
That's a good point, that. They describe what they usually do. It's a very good point. It isn't the Russians. The Russians didn't sack Libya. Pretty sure the Russians didn't do that. I'm pretty sure the Russians didn't tell a pack of lies about Gaddafi killing his own people, while at the same time covertly arming the lunatic jihadists that were sent into Libya. I'm sure the Russians didn't do that. I'm sure the Russians didn't make up a pack of lies about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and kill 2 million people and make 4 million more homeless. Sure, the Russians didn't. I'm pretty sure the Russians didn't do that. The Russians. So we're going to leave that there. And you know what we're going to do as well? Just for today, we're going to say balls to the rest of the headlines. Balls to them. Can't be arsed with the rest of the headlines. So we're going to jump straight into my first conversation today. Pippa King's a remarkable woman. I caught up with her earlier. She's working in the afternoons. She would have been used to coming on the programme in the evenings, but I had to pre-record her today, and it was a great thing that I did. She was in top form. She campaigns against intrusions, not just to the privacy of children, but to the privacy of everybody. She runs the biometrics in schools and against RFID in schools blogs. PippiKing.blogspot.com is where you'll find her. She got into it about 13 or 14 years ago after her children were nearly fingerprinted at primary school for a library system. She said, no, I'm not having it. And she was able to prevent that from taking place. She's a great lady, always brilliantly briefed. And we speak about a lot in this 30 to 35 minute long conversation. We do talk about something extraordinary, which is new software that is being given to children who might be sending emails, who might be writing who might be sending messages to one another. She talks about new software that will correct the language used by children just in case the language being used might offend the recipient child. Did you get that? So if a child is sending an email to another child, they've now got interface software that will say to the child, listen, be careful about how you're phrasing that. It might cause offence on the other end. We talk about that. We talk about India. We talk about passports. We talk about a lot, Pippa King. But first of all, I asked Pippa about freedom of information requests that she has filed in Scotland to find out how many children in Scotland have, in fact, been fingerprinted by their schools. And that's where we picked this up. How many children in Scotland have been fingerprinted? What did Pippa find out there?
Yeah, so the Protection of Freedoms Bill was introduced in 2013, actually got passed in 2012, but as of 2013, schools in England and Wales had to ask permission from parents and from pupils if they wanted to use their biometric data for canteen, library, registration sort of use. But I wasn't aware until maybe even a couple of years ago, that this didn't apply to children in Northern Ireland and Scotland. And that was because part of the Protection of Freedoms Act that applied to DNA and fingerprints, in the fact it was setting up sort of retention times for police and security services, and the bill introduced the biometrics commissioner. That biometrics commissioner and the retention time for DNA and fingerprints only applied to England and Wales. So in the wisdom of the parliamentary process, they decided that, oh, this is fingerprinting in schools, we'll only apply it to England and Wales. So it turns out that children in Scotland and Northern Ireland don't have the same level of consent. And it was interesting, I was talking to a freelance journalist who sort of does a bit of work with BBC, but she's a great, great person. And she was sort of saying, well, can you imagine if we segregated, you know, a religious part of the community and say, okay, well, if you're this religion, we'll ask for your consent, but if you're that religion, we won't ask for your consent, and you have to get fingerprinted or the colour of your skin. So we're just because children live north of the border doesn't mean to say they've got any less rights than children that are south of the border in Scotland. So in order to try and effect and extend the Protection of Freedoms Act consent to Scottish children, I sort of needed to find out what the extent of biometrics in schools in Scotland was. So over summer, I sent all 32 local authorities freedom of information requests to find out how many schools were using it and how many children in the school were using it out of the general population. So because the Freedom of Information Act of Scotland is slightly different to the Freedom of Information Act in the UK, in England, and I couldn't ask the schools direct, which was a bit of a blessing. Otherwise, I'd have sent out hundreds and hundreds of freedom of information requests. I had to ask the local authorities. And it was really interesting. They got back really quickly with the results, because the purchase of such systems tends to be on a more local authority basis, whereas schools in England tend to be operating on a very individual basis. So I've got about two-thirds of the requests back so far, and out of the school population, about 680,000, out of two-thirds of freedom of information requests I've got back, it turns out there's just over 35,000 children at this moment in time that have been fingerprinted, which is only a snapshot of...
35,000, Pippa?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably about 5% of you know, the overall sort of Scottish school children population, but I've still got to get the other third back, so it may be that...
Could be more.
To reply, because there is this technology in schools, and they're having to sort of, you know, drill down and get some figures for me.
Do you want to do me a quick favour? Do you want to remind our listeners what the school's stated aim is in fingerprinting children? What is the excuse or the raison d'etre, for whatever other way of saying it? What is it?
So fingerprint technology came about in the UK, as far as I was aware, in 2001. When a company wanted to introduce it to primary schools to make it easier for children to wander in and out of a library, put their fingerprint on a scanner, get a book, scan their fingerprint, and wander out. So you were getting away with not maybe having to employ somebody sat in the library. The children weren't, you know, writing their names down anywhere. So immediately you've sort of taken a member of staff out of the equation, and children aren't using their writing skills. So, but they just sort of sold it as a speeding up process. It makes reading more accessible. Children will read more. It will improve their reading habits. Likewise, it's used for canteens to cut down queue times, and it makes it easier because you can't forget a swipe card or a PIN number. You know, I don't know about you, but I'm a mum, and no mum has ever had a conversation with another mum that's going, oh gosh, my son forgot the PIN number for the iPad today. It never happens. And also as well, if you can't teach a child to remember, you know, a 4 or 6 digit PIN, how on earth can you expect them to sit a GCSE and remember all the data associated with that exam? So it's a vacuous argument that you can use fingerprints because it, you know, enables children not to remember PIN numbers or swipe.
It's a ridiculous argument. Let me put this to you, because of your own brilliant history in this very, very important area. This is hugely important. The 35,000 so far in Scotland, you know a lot about consent, Pippa. It's how you got into it. Have you been able to ascertain whether the parents of those children gave consent for them to be fingerprinted?
It's varied. In some authorities, it's just taken as a given that the children will participate in the system without any consent. I think if there was some non-consent in those particular authorities, they would probably be taken into consideration. Some authorities that have introduced it in the past couple of years have taken on board the Protection of Freedoms Act consent. So in the Protection of Freedoms Act, if a school wants to introduce a biometric system, it has to inform the parent and child, and then it has to ask permission from both parents, and it really should ask permission from the child as well, though that's a part of the act that isn't really adhered to by schools. So schools have to ask both parents, and if one parent agrees and the other parent disagrees, the disagreement overrides the agreement or the consent. If both parents agree and the child doesn't consent, then the child's non-consent overrides the parent consent. Which is why it is good for schools to ask the children their permission. Children are sometimes a bit more tech savvy than parents, and they don't get their news from mainstream media. They get it online. They're very tech sort of orientated, and sometimes a child might be more educated in the pitfalls of using biometric technology and maybe the advantages as well, and they can make their own decision maybe better than the parents. So that's how it operates in England and Wales, or that's how it should operate. In Scotland, that doesn't apply. So, like I said, we do have some authorities that take it for granted that children will use it. Those are authorities that have been using it for nearly 20 years. The authorities that have introduced it a little later, maybe in the past 2 or 3 years, are tending to sort of ask for consent, but they don't need to be honest. They could implement it without getting consent. And the area of biometric technology that bothers me most, fingerprinting bothers me for very different reasons than facial recognition, but it's facial recognition, because in order to implement a facial recognition system, you really need to be having, everybody's going to be on the system, isn't it? Because
yeah.
The system is, going to be recording everybody. And it's been implemented in New York State, Seattle and Arkansas in some edge schools there for safety reasons, so that they're not going to let people on campus in case, because of the gun crime. But quite often, the people that have gone on and committed crimes like that on American campuses have been ex-pupils or pupils already in the school. So I don't quite know why that argument is sufficing. And certainly civil liberties groups over there have raised that point. But I did sort of think, mainly in England, we have fingerprinting that is the main sort of biometric of choice. Though we have had facial scanning, iris scanning, infrared palm scanning. And it just struck me that if we still had areas of the UK that weren't regulated in the form of consent, that the companies that are now doing the hard sell in the States for facial recognition for safety purposes could quite easily come across to Scotland and Northern Ireland and sell it to schools there. Not so much an easy thing to do in England and Wales, because if people didn't consent, they just couldn't do it. And I'd be very surprised if there was a school with a 100% consent rate. So I'm just concerned about the companies that are targeting the American education market coming across and targeting the UK market. So that was one of the reasons. And also because I think it's really important that all children have the same rights. Especially, I know I can understand different parts of the world that, rights, all children should have the same rights universally, I think, but that's not practical. It's not going to happen. But certainly in the UK, it's bonkers that children in England and Wales have more rights over their digital identity than children in Scotland and Northern Ireland. So it is interesting. One of the things that sort of jumped out of one of the freedom of information requests was that one particular authority had been fingerprinting their kids since 1999, which is 2 years prior to my knowledge of it ever happening in the whole of the UK. So that was quite a shock. So that's nearly 20 years. And in actual fact, if you take that 35,000 children and sort of think, okay, well, that's a snapshot in time. We'll say maybe that 35,000 children are mainly high school, because they only ask for high schools, not primary schools. And they're in the high school. So you've got 5 years. And so there's 35,000 there. So in the past 20 years, you've got four lots of 5 years. So actually, if you start looking at it like that, the amount of children that have gone through a fingerprint system, and this is only based on 2/3 of the Freedom of Information requests coming back, is going to be over the 100,000 mark. So it's, and the fingerprint technology or the biometric technology that's used in schools is bottom end. It's low end technology. It's old fashioned technology that was around in the military 25 years ago that's now obsolete, that's sort of come through. I mean, there are industry standards that have that apply to biometric systems, but last time I asked the Department of Education, which was a couple of years ago, they had neither seen, tested any hardware or software for any biometric system in any of UK schools. So there's no standard set, there's no knowledge of what the tech is in these schools. So that's another issue as well.
It's a huge issue.
Address.
Yeah, see, just before we move on there, I want to put this to you. I probably do this all the time, but I want to do it anyway, again, because we do get people who say, what's the big deal? Now, I know that will wind you up, and I know it'll wind, you know, some of our listeners up today. But for those people listening to this who say, well, look, things are becoming more convenient. It's a convenient thing to do. Get your fingerprints. And it'll make things much quicker, much more efficient, using libraries, maybe using banks, whatever. Why? And I don't want to tell you of all people to be brief, Pippa, it's too important, but I want to get through other issues as well. Give them the hard, cold facts as to why they should be concerned about it.
Well, gosh, let's give three facts, okay. The security of a fingerprint isn't 100%, so... If you were using a pin a number or a swipe card in school, you'd get through 100% of the time. A fingerprint is something like 99.5% effective. So I think one children in every 1,000 will not be able to eat or will have a problem on a fingerprint scanner in school. So that's not a great system. Second point is the fingerprint isn't itself stored in the system. It's maybe 30, 40, 50 digit template, a number string, an algorithm. That template will be specific to the system, but there are little programs that will make it compatible with the police national database, Interpol, Europol, so that data can be transferred. The third point I would, and this is one of the points that really bothered me when my children at ages 6 and 7 were fingerprinted, is that it normalises them to surveillance. It's too much data than is absolutely necessary to get a library book out. It's saying to my children, in order for you to read a book, in order for you to eat a meal, in order for you to get access to that area, we need to either scan your face or take your fingerprint. And that's not how society works. That's preparing them for a police state. And so those are my main three points, really.
Yeah. It's enough, and it's enough for me. Pippa King is our guest, pippaking.blogspot.com. There's no better briefed person on this than Pippa. I mean, it's absolutely vital that you understand this, because I suppose we're kind of at, even though Pippa said there it goes back to 99, we're kind of at the beginning of it in terms of the next couple of years, I think, are going to be crucial as we're going to see more and more of it, or the attempt to roll out more and more of it. So glad that you're back today, because you always bring something new and crazy. You're not crazy, of course, but you always bring some new information, irrefutable information that just leaves my head spinning. Tell me about cyberbullying intervention and interfaces that children can use when they're typing messages or emails or texts. This is fairly spooky. Go ahead.
So I have a number of other parents that are sort of working in the same field that I do. Another one is a woman called Jen, and she runs a website called Defend Digital Me. So she looks at the sort of the technology that's used in schools, like Google Classroom, My Maths, all that sort of different stuff, and the sort of information that pupils give up in order for them to interact with the system. And she came across something called cyberbullying. And this is basically a screening process that when a child may type something like, I don't know, something like a tweet that, or a message that they're not happy with, the screening process will come up and say, you've actually typed something that somebody else might find offensive. Do you want to reword it? And if you don't reword it, it'll flash up again and say, well, we're going to send this message, but we're going to send it with a warning. So the recipient has a "this might upset you" sort of tag on it. And I don't know how I feel about that, because, you know, how are we going to make well-rounded adults if you can't deal with a bit of crap in your life?
Yeah.
Surely that's, I'm sorry to say it, but, you know, that's you know, a bit of hard knocks, whether it be, and I'm not making light of any sort of text bullying at all, because I know it can have devastating effects. But, you know, if somebody's texting you don't like it, block them. You know, this is one of the things that we need to learn. Don't interact with those people. And this is the sort of thing that biometric technology was sort of saying, oh, it reduces bullying in schools, you know. But what it doesn't, you know, bullying and people being unpleasant to each other are a way of life. You know, we're not, you know, human beings, we're not flawless. Technology cannot eradicate those aspects of us being a human. I mean, yes, I guess this is making you rethink, but actually, surely to goodness, if you haven't got a brain that tells you that yourself, or you're not capable of discerning that, this technology is sort of dehumanizing us in some sort of sense. We're being policed by it. And
self-censorship, Pippa, because if child yeah. A is typing a message, an email to child B, and gets the prompt, have a rethink about how you phrase your sentence or sentences in case it offends the recipient, it's obviously going to lead to children going around in some kind of crazy cyber sanitized version of our world, where I've got to think very hard before I say anything, in case how could any good come from that?
I don't know. I mean, but the one thing that bothers me about this type of program is that the program will know the user, yeah, and they'll log every time they do something. So it'll have artificial intelligence, so it'll learn, I need to watch these trigger words. And on some sort of cloud-based database, there'll be a log of the fact that that particular child has sent, or possibly has been thinking about sending, whether or not it went or not. And where's that data going? You know, it's all this collection of data. I mean, there's many sort of different levels of this, but I don't know. I think we should be teaching ourselves, or teaching our children, how to behave. And it's interesting because so we've got a new Data Protection Act at the moment that passed in 2018, earlier on this year. I think it was May, just after May. And in it, one of the provisions was that the Information Commissioner, who oversees the Data Protection Act, has to work on some age verification code for websites that are particularly aimed at children. And so there was a number of us, sort of from civil society groups, privacy groups, different sort of educators from universities, that got together in London and had a bit of a brainstorm as to how we can do this. And essentially, it's internet censoring for children. And there was many different ways of suggestions. And my main suggestion would be, why don't we just educate kids, you know, that if they're looking at bad content, they need to move away from it, rather than screen, you know, make the internet sanitized. I think, you know, we need to teach kids when they're, to recognize internet sites are not age appropriate for them, to recognize when they're being advertised at too much, you know. And there's that lack of education there. We're abdicating that adult responsibility to some set of codes that will be completely obsolete, and there'll be a way around it anyway. And it would only apply to websites in the UK, so the kids could go abroad. And it's this stupid, I don't know if it's, maybe it's a good idea with good intentions, but there's absolutely no way any sort of age verification code would be applicable or even practical on the internet. And I do think, again, with this cyberbullying, is that, and with, you know, biometrics, it's too much information. We have to educate the next generation how to use the computer systems and programs and machine learning and artificial intelligence really responsibly. Because at the moment, my generation, I'm sort of in my 40s, grew up without experiencing that. This next generation are sort of almost like guinea pigs. And I think that the best legislation, the best laws will come in when the kids that are now sort of in their teenagers are in their 30s and 40s and 50s, and will be the consequence, and have to live their adult life with the consequence of giving up too much data. And they will recognize that, I think. So maybe in 30 years' time, we'll get some better ethical use of computers and how we share our data.
Yeah, I hope you're right. Do you know, I want to go, that's really, really interesting. I hadn't considered that. Yeah, of course, that's going to be true. And those who have dealt with the consequences of it, as you said there, could very well be those who, you know, pick up the baton and fight against it. I want to go back to what you said about children. You and I are pretty much the same age, and I went to a primary school. There were always kids from tough families, you know, hardship, and they were a bit brutal, and, you know, you dealt with it. You ran away, or when it was really necessary, you informed your own parent. As far as cyber bullying goes, I get very worried when the state tries to legislate for this. I mean, Matt Hancock, of course, has been saying this week they want to introduce guidelines for time spent on the internet. Now, Pippa, you're a mother. That's for you, Pippa. It's for you to, I don't want to use the word police, but it's for you to manage that in your own home. Nobody knows more or nobody could ever do a better job of looking after your children than you. Nobody. So I get very worried when they say this. What did you make of what he said, Matt Hancock?
Well, that's really interesting, because that was one of the topics that came up at this sort of day that we had, sort of talking about age verification, that, you know, internet sites could say, flash like, oh, you've been on the, you know, non-stop on the computer for 20 minutes, you need to take a 10-minute break and go and walk outside, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or they could say that some programs should shut down at 9 o'clock. What all the kids are going to do, and this was brought up, is that they'll just go in and change the time clock on their device. Where you can monitor that, and if you've got a VPN, which most people have, I mean, quite a lot of people I know have anyway, which is a virtual private network, you can sort of, to all intents and purposes, it looks like you're logging in from another country in a different time zone. So there's no way you can, unless there's a massive crackdown on how the internet operates. I don't really think that anything practical will come of it. And it's interesting, because whatever technology you give these children, they will crack it, because they are the
way ahead,
savvy than us.
They're way ahead. I remember many moons ago, my cousin, who's well grown up now, Martin Evans, he's in his 30s, but as a youngster, he was very young, Martin, when the first mobile phones were out and about, and he was young and his dad had one. He was able to pick it apart and do stuff with it. You're absolutely right. There's nothing like children. I want to move to India now in a second, because it's been very interesting in India. I came across something very interesting the other day about, and I'm trying to get the people on the show. It might take me a while. They're in Oregon, I think. But they're a group of people that were concerned that their children were getting a bit too fond of the tablets and the smartphones. And what they started doing with the children was, first of all, they looked at themselves as parents and the fact that their own lives were crazy and that they were coming home after 10, 12-hour days, husband and wife, and didn't have a lot of time. So they started making more time in the evenings, and they started bargaining with the kids. They were saying things like, well, look, yeah, have half an hour there and make sure I can see that you're chatting to your friend, but then, you know, chat with your friend on social media. But then they started reintroducing what we grew up with, Pippa, card games, beg your neighbour, and stuff like that, you know, and board games. And what they seem to have found is that the usage, the children's usage is going down. They're desperately keen for the warmth and the face-to-face human contact of playing the card games and the old board games. How fascinating.
Absolutely fascinating. Well, we're human living animals, aren't we? And that's what we thrive off.
Yeah.
Looking into a computer screen, I don't think is very natural.
No.
And this is one of the reasons certain parents were against sort of fingerprinting, and I can sort of understand this, is especially when you use it for registration, there's that eye-to-eye contact of a teacher looking up and, you know, shouting out a student's name and then sort of nodding at them, right, you're here, and oh, he looks a bit tired, or she looks in a good mood, or, you know, they've got a black eye or something.
Yeah.
And you take away that sort of really valuable human contact. And like I say, we, you know, especially with this cyberbullying, we're losing our humanity. I think we're in a danger of losing our humanity by abdicating responsibility to technology in that sort of sense. And I think that's really interesting what's happened in Oregon. And but it comes as no surprise.
Yeah.
It is just ever so easy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in the northwest.
I used Thomas Tank Engine terribly when my two were growing up as a video.
This is it. Yeah, I think it's Oregon. I could be. I'm often wrong about these things. I'm scatterbrained. But I'll give you a very quick laugh before we talk about India. This is a true story. Caroline and myself went to. We had a week in Cornwall a few weeks back, and we loved it. We didn't do anything. There was no phones, there was no nothing. Beautiful, lovely place we stayed in. And one night, Caroline took out Battleship, I swear to God. And we're sitting there having a glass of wine playing Battleship, the two of us, laughing at the childishness of it because we hadn't played it for years and years. And I swear on all that's sacred, that right next door to us, in the chalet next door, in the cottage next door, a couple of children came out. They were 7 and 9. I swear, Pippa, they were fascinated by Battleship. They wanted, what's going on? They wanted to know the rules of it. We were like, the rules are so ridiculously basic, you know? And within a couple of minutes, they were playing it, fascinated by it.
That's great. That is great. And that's exactly, you know, what we should be doing for community. And I can remember, golly, I mean, this is in the 1970s, the local primary school having Beetle drives.
Oh, yeah.
My goodness.
Wow. Gobby with the day.
Yeah, that's when people came together and played games. I mean, gosh, as if life was only that simple nowadays.
Absolutely. Pippa King is our guest. If you haven't checked out Pippa's website before, I'm sure many of you have, go to pippaking.blogspot.com, right? Serious stuff. So, one of the things I wanted to get into with you, I dropped your name a few times last week, was what's been happening in India. A couple of interesting stories coming out of India, even today. This is from the Times of India. I'm springing this on you now, which is unfair because you won't have had a chance to see it. But the headline in the Times of India today is, soon your face will be your boarding card. No need for boarding cards or passports anymore. You won't need ID proof and boarding cards anymore. For domestic flights in India, the government has zeroed in on facial recognition as the biometric to be used for giving passengers their paperless entry into airports. This is hot on the heels of a story that you know all about, and that is the biometric ID cards, which there was seemingly a lot of opposition to in India. When I mentioned you last week and that I was going to talk about this, a couple of people got in touch and they said they wonder, are countries like India and Pakistan, which are obviously developing economies, there's a lot of tech stuff going on in those particular countries in terms of tech businesses. Are they kind of guinea pig countries, do we think, for this sort of technology? What do you think?
Yeah, the Indian system is a huge system. It's called the Aadhaar system. And it was, as far as I understand, it sort of grew from the need to keep track of communities that were illiterate. So, for example, if they were in the deepest depth of India and they wanted to vaccinate, people weren't able to write. So they were fingerprinting them, taking their biometrics to check who had had what medicine. I might be wrong with this, but certainly that's how I sort of...
You're right.
That's how my inn was. And so they extended that then to more of the population and more of the general population. I mean, we're talking sort of 10 or 15 years ago. And then it sort of got to a national ID project, which I think is mainly based around the fingerprint, but it got to a point where you couldn't buy a car, you couldn't get a mobile phone. Certainly if you worked for the government, you had to log in and out with your fingerprint, you know, to go to work. It started in the school system there about 4 or 5 years ago, and actually they were using it to track attendance of teachers, because apparently a lot of teachers use Skype off work. So they were using it to track teachers, and then that sort of developed onto children. But there's been a couple of, I mean, I sort of keep an eye sort of on my peripheral vision of what's happening in India, because the system that's in, I'm not sure which tech company is supplying it, but it is riddled with inaccuracies and data protection breaches. I mean, I think people have found their data available to buy on the open market for ridiculously cheap prices. Fingerprints have been compromised. And it's really... it's been such a disaster that it's almost like unusable. It will get unusable. And I think that's no bad thing for India, because I have to scrap it and start all over again.
Yeah.
But it's been a very interesting learning lesson for the Western world in that sort of respect. And I don't think they will base a national ID system on a fingerprint. I think they will base it on your face.
On your face. And
I've learned the lesson that fingerprint identity is not as good as a facial recognition system, and if it's good enough for border use. I mean, facial recognition technology was a more expensive technology than fingerprinting was, hence why they've used it more in schools, and which is why it became more available. But increasingly facial recognition technology is becoming a lot more accessible. And really, it's not necessarily facial recognition technology. All you're telling the system to do is to recognize a cluster of pixels and the distance between pixels. So if you have facial recognition running behind a system, it could also recognize tattoos. It can also recognize the color of your clothes, the type of clothes. We have something called gait recognition, which recognizes how you move, although that's not meant to be a terribly accurate technology. So I had a meeting with a tech company early on in the year who were very ethically based, actually. I have to say I was very encouraged by their ethics. And they were sort of explaining that it is just a cluster. You know, as far as the system's concerned, it doesn't recognise a face. It just recognises a cluster of pixels. And I think that will be the way that technology goes. I mean, I just tweeted this morning that in Dubai, they were looking at putting tens of thousands of cameras around the city to turn it into a smart city.
Lovely.
And they're going to run facial recognition behind it, automatic plates, number plate recognition. And they were also going to introduce microphones into the system that would sort of tell people that they were misbehaving and preempting crime. Like, oh, do you know that you might just be about to commit a crime, sort of stuff. A bit like the cyberbully screening. It's just bizarre.
What could possibly go wrong, eh?
Yeah, well, I did sort of tweet out. I said, you know, this sounds like a prison. It just, and that's certainly not the society I want to live in. And it's not the society I want my children to live in. And that's one of the reasons I objected so much to the fingerprinting in schools, is because I just saw it as normalising my children to accept a level of surveillance that actually was completely unnecessary at school level. But, you know, I've said this before on your show, that we worked with Noto ID really closely sort of 10 or 15 years ago to get this technology out of schools. And their view was, I mean, Noto ID were campaigning against the biometric identity card that the then Labour government wanted to bring in. And their view was that if they were successful, then all the government would need to do is wait another 15, 20 years. And you've got the next generation of kids that are normalised and compliant to that level of surveillance for everyday activities. And I feel that we should, going back to age verification, we should all be more aware of the data that we give up and who's got access to it, how it's being processed. Do we actually need to give that data up? Could we do something that, you know, could we do the same activity without using that data, using our own data? And I think we've sort of, for the past sort of 20, 30 years, we've been very complacent to that. And it's like I said to you earlier, I think the next generation will be the ones to put right the mistakes that we've made with our complacency of educating the next generation. And I think that's, you know, there's a number of us that are all doing what we can to raise awareness of, you know, how much data you've got out there digitally and what your digital footprint is.
Yeah, it's one of the more serious issues. That's why I do, when I look at the topics covered on the programme regularly, and we've got, you know, various things we like to cover, and you try to give as much time to things as you can, this is hugely important. It's got such profound implications for freedom, for freedom to move, freedom to speak, that it has to be on the agenda all the time.
I think even so now, because you've got artificial intelligence. Now, I mean, it's not humans that are monitoring us now. I mean, it's artificial intelligence and machine learning that is highlighting this. I mean, like the cyberbullying, like the artificial intelligence system behind what's going to go up in Dubai. And we were sort of talking earlier, just before we went on air, about where people are now drawing the lines as to what is offensive, you know, and how do you know if you've said or done something that the system has flagged up as, oh, you know, this person has said or done this that you don't know about, and suddenly you're being profiled in an inaccurate way. You know, if you say something that somebody that in largely isn't offensive, but they, or the system decides that it is, you get flagged up and put on some database somewhere that you might possibly commit this sort of crime because you've displayed this behavior. We don't know. And in fact, the police, there's an interesting article in the Register, Liberty, which is a human rights group based in London, were involved with the Home Office's a development of a new police computer. So we have the Police National Database and the Police National Computer. So the Police National Database that we have in the UK has photographs on. The Police National Computer is a text-based, as far as I understand, sort of program. What they want to do is merge the two, also merge the fingerprint and DNA database, so that everything is on one database, which, if it's all factual, brilliant. But what Liberty learnt was that, in actual fact, what the Home Office wanted to do was start to make notes on people and put that on the database as well. So people could be on that database, they've never committed a crime, never had their custody photograph taken, never had their fingerprints taken, but because you are a person of interest, for whatever reason, you wouldn't even know if you were on the database, that's what the Home Office is looking to do. So Liberty, rightly so, well, maybe not rightly so, maybe they should have stayed, they refused to cooperate because they said this is not the database that you said it would be. You're starting now to create a national citizen database. It's not a police database. This is you collecting data on citizens.
Pre-crime. So, this is Minority Report pre-crime farming, isn't it?
This is what we've got to be careful of. And certainly in Durham, there's a guy called Mike Barton who oversees the whole biometric strategy with the police, and especially facial recognition. He's been on that since 2012. So Mike Barton, I don't know exactly what position he is, maybe he's chief constable of Durham Police. I think it's Durham Police had a database. They started collecting photographs of people that were of interest to them. They hadn't done any sort of crime. They were just of interest. And somebody, the complaint was made to the Information Commissioner's Office, who oversees the Data Protection Act. And the Information Commissioner's Office basically said, you're not allowed to do that. You're meant to be, reacting to crime, not sort of spying on people. That's not the police's job. You know, if anybody's going to do that, that should be the security services. And there's a very specific definition of what roles the police and security services have. They're very different. But the police were taking it upon themselves to do that. And they were told to dismantle the database, basically. And as far as I know, I mean, I'd have to check, that they haven't done it. Whether or not they have done it, they certainly weren't very forthcoming to do it. So there is a want by police in England now to generally, and this is coming from the top down, to collect more information about us than is necessary. And in order for them to do that, they have to do it without our consent. And that one of the ways they can do that is with facial recognition, or they can access what we do online. So what I'm sort of saying about being aware of your digital fingerprint, certainly as much as you are able, is to, without it affecting your life too much, because obviously we all sort of, a proportion of us live online as we do, is to be really conscious of how you're using online services and maybe what you're saying. I mean, I don't think but you should particularly police yourself any more than you would if you were having a conversation face to face with somebody. But, who knows what artificial intelligence systems are running behind what now. And certainly they do in schools. This is really interesting. So Defend Digital Me website, I think it's defenddigitalme.com or .co.uk, they have a lot of information. And some educational tech suppliers to schools will record children. Some of them will record their voice and also record them with the camera without them knowing about it. Under the prevent strategy, schools can create trigger words so that they start looking at all the emails and texting that has gone on by the school intranet containing these trigger words. And of course, this doesn't stop when the kids leave the school gate, because kids are encouraged to log on when they go home and go online and access different chat services via the school. So,
and their phones have microphones, their laptops have microphones, and I have no doubt that artificial intelligence programs are listening.
It's the artificial intelligence that's picking up the trigger words. Again, this is all it's got such potential to profile it, you know.
And ultimately,
Pippa, and the whole new age, we have absolutely no idea. I mean, in the past 5 years, I can the landscape, technology, the digital landscape has changed completely, and I can't imagine what it's going to look like in 5 years' time.
Well, we're just about out of time. I certainly wouldn't put any words in your mouth, and I've always admired the very non-partisan, inclusive approach that you've taken to this fairly most serious of subjects, and I really do mean that. I'm not blowing smoke at you. I really do think it's fantastic. I wouldn't be putting words in your mouth. I, of course, with my tinfoil hat on, I ultimately think that all roads eventually lead to identifying those whom want to challenge the state, want to take on the state in terms of how the state goes about doing what it does, whether it's, you know, committing atrocities overseas, whether it's an encroachment on free speech here. I believe that's where all roads lead. This is about the kettling of society and humanity to keep people docile and to keep them obedient. That's what I believe. I wouldn't put any words in your mouth. I think your website's brilliant, by the way. Your own website. It's Biometrics in School. That's Pippa's. If you want to find Pippa on Twitter, @Pippa_King, just look for Biometrics in School. PippaKing.blogspot.com. Obviously, the last word to you, Pippa, and thanks for doing what you do. I really mean that.
No, thank you very much for having me on, Richie. I really appreciate it, because otherwise I still speak to people now and they're like, what's their fingerprinting children in schools? I'm like, I've sort of lived this for the past sort of 15, 17 years. But so thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. And everybody just take 10 minutes and just think, is there anything I can do today to relieve my digital fingerprint a little bit more? Not literally fingerprint, but footstep maybe. A little bit more than you already do, and that would be good.
Legend, Pippa. Look after yourself. No doubt we'll find some time for you to come back on before the dreaded C word. That's Christmas, of course, to any parent. Didn't want to hear that word. Not in October. PippaKing.blogspot.com. Biometrics in School, @Pippa_King. Always a pleasure, Pippa. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, she's a remarkable woman, Pippa King. I've given the website there when I spoke with her earlier on, PippaKing.blogspot.com. I think you can sum up where where we are in terms of what's going on, what I think is going on. This is where the whole idea of fake news has come in. Now, when people hear fake news as a term, I suppose they immediately think of Donald Trump. It's the first thing that comes to mind, fake news. And they think Donald Trump. They think that Trump coined the term. He didn't coin the term. Trump used it and does use it to describe certain quarters of the US media, CNN particularly, whom he believes, I think he genuinely believes, regardless of what I think of Trump, he genuinely believes are misrepresenting him and what he does. But the term fake news didn't come from him. It came from someplace far darker than Trump. And what fake news means is, it means that the establishment and the pillars of the establishment, the mainstream media and the intelligence agencies and the police, have been for years identifying alternative journalists and independent researchers as fake, as faux journalists. They're not real, they're conspiracy theorists. Fake news came out of conspiracy theorists. Conspiracy theorists morphed into fake news. Now, that was fine. It was fine for years to be called a conspiracy theorist. Fair enough. You know, sticks and stones and the slings and arrows and all that. Who cares? Call me what you want. I'm happy to continue speaking with conspiracy researchers. But what we're seeing now, what Pippa was describing there, is the next step of the fake news agenda is to remove the purveyors of fake news. So the establishment will say, and has been saying of late, particularly this year, 2018, that they've got to be taking more seriously information that they've deemed to be false, but can no longer be considered harmless because the information might be influencing people vis-a-vis Joe Public. So the establishment is saying, we've got to go after these independents and these alternatives. We could laugh at them before with their conspiracy theories, but now we've got to take them more seriously because we believe they have an undue influence on what people might think or are thinking. That misinformation is dangerous and can be harmful to people. It can have negative effects on democracies. That's what they are saying, right? So the next step then is to try and prevent people from hearing that which the establishment doesn't want out there. This is true. And I can only talk about this programme. I do listen to other programmes. I mentioned one or two of them on the program on this show from time to time. But if I talk about this program and this program only, this is why I say time and time again that I, as in me, the person, me, Richie Allen, isn't important. I'm not. And there isn't anybody after me. There's nobody out to get me. There isn't any intelligence agency that gives a damn about me. They're not interested in me. They don't care about me. They're not listening to me. I have no doubt that is true. What they don't want is, they don't want people like Deborah Tavares, Ilana Freeland, Dean Henderson. I could be here all day. They don't want those people speaking. These are eloquent, lucid, thoughtful, researched people talking to audiences through independent radio shows and giving those audiences a different perspective on what's happening, and also telling those audiences truths, facts, historical facts that are facts, but that the establishment would prefer people didn't know. And that's where this, all of this leads to that. You know, listening to people through their laptops, through their mobile phones, they want you to believe that it's about advertising to you more effectively. And on one level it is, but on the other level, it's about identifying what people are saying to one another and who might need to be watched and who might need to be silenced. And again, I'm not being modest. It's not me. I've done some, what I would consider, I've done some interesting academic work on how the media operates. That's my area of expertise, and I've done some interesting stuff on that, but it's not that important. It's a nice entry-level thing for people. But the really important stuff is the genocide stuff, is the Agenda 30 stuff, is the vaccine agenda stuff. Hugely important. And it's those people, ultimately, that the establishment or the system wants to silence. And that's what we're seeing through all of these different strands. Pretty horrifying to be introducing software to children. Software that would kick in when a child is writing an email to another child, or when a child is writing an email to a parent. And the child could be typing something and the software will identify that it might be offensive and tell the child, hey, you know, you might want to rethink how you phrase that. And then on the other end, the recipient will get a warning as well. And this is all artificial intelligence stuff. And what's that designed to do? It's designed to bring in, to herald, to usher in and impose on people a very unnatural self-censorship where everybody goes about their life, their lives, and thinks very hard before speaking to anybody or before expressing an opinion, and will then often self-censor. Well, I'd like to say this. This is how I feel, but I could be ridiculed for it. And that's just, that's the least that could happen to you, ridiculed. It could have implications for me in terms of my future employment. If the social credit system comes in here, which I have no doubt it will, it could have profound implications for me further down the road. So maybe I shouldn't say what it is that I feel, because that person over there might kick off, they might get triggered, they might get offended. So when you have, not only at the Labour Party, not only at the Liberal Democrats conferences and the Conservative Party conferences, but at political party conferences around the world, you have people talking about how we need to we've really got to have a look at independent media. We've got to have a look at social media and how we can stop so-called fake news. So the establishment will identify, well, this is fake. So the establishment will eventually say, very soon, we can no longer allow people say that vaccines are harmful. The establishment will say, because this is provably untrue. The establishment will say, we have reached a scientific consensus years ago that vaccines are safe and they have been a great gift to humanity. They've saved millions of lives. It is a fact. There isn't any argument vaccines are good. So there are people out there reaching large audiences saying the opposite. So we can't have that anymore because they're harming people. By saying that, they might encourage somebody not to get a vaccine. We can't have that. So we can maybe criminalise such statements in the way that they've criminalised Holocaust denial. For example, it's one of the only examples I can think of in terms of criminalising a opinion or a thought, right? So that's where we're going. And I don't know what can be done about it. I'm not overly pessimistic, to be honest. I was pessimistic about it probably 3, 4, 5 months ago when I learned about Ofcom, the regulatory body here for television and radio, and their plans to stop independents like myself who completely operate independent of anybody. Not their plans to stop us. They're not planning to stop me. They're planning to impose a license on me, to inflict on me the requirement to have a license with them, meaning that when you do have a license with them, you then become subject to their rules and regulations. And if you are in breach of any of those rules and regulations, they can take your license away. And that's where we're going. You know, people can have opinions about this show, and there are many opinions about it. People think it's good, people think it's bad, people think it's terrible, people think it's funny, people think I'm the biggest arsehole that ever lived. It's great. There are a gamut of opinions out there about the show. But it's independent and I can do it. What the show has never been, regardless of whether I'm any good or not, it's never been harmful. Nobody has ever said anything on this programme that could be construed as harmful to a third party. Nobody has ever come on here and accused somebody of something they didn't do without me taking them to task. Nobody has ever come on here and recommended that somebody be attacked physically or hurt or harmed in any way. Obviously not. I'm a professional broadcaster. I wouldn't have it. I wouldn't allow it. But there have been many people, like last night's guest Deborah Tavares and others, who have some very strong opinions about why the world is the way the world is today. And those opinions are challenged. How'd you find that out? Oh, I see you've got a bit of documentation on your website there. I see you've got an official paper. Oh, I see you've got some news articles from the Washington Post. But that won't be good enough going forward. And that's where we're going to be in the next couple of years. You know, look back at the Conservative Party conference this week. Forget about all the attacks on Jeremy Corbyn and anti-Semitism, ridiculous as they are. Forget about all the nonsense about Brexit and all of that. The key things said by a number of different speakers this week were about hate speech and were about the need to impose some sort of regulation on the independent media and on social media. And again, the truth or industrial complex heroes who want you to believe that they're the last line of resistance, the presenters whose heads are up their own arses, high on the whiff of their own narcissism. The establishment doesn't care about the presenters. Couldn't give a shit about me, like I said, or anybody else. It's the opinions expressed by terrifically briefed researchers. They've got to eliminate that. They can't have any more. They can't allow those opinions be expressed, because those opinions might eventually reach bigger and bigger and bigger audiences. And people might eventually, when they realise what's going on, might be compelled to do something about it. And that's where all of this stuff comes in, all the technology that Pippa was talking about, the fingerprinting, the facial recognition technology that's being rolled out without anybody's consent, the microphones in the smartphones, of course, and in the laptops, which are demonstrably, provably listening to people. They are. Because you can have a conversation in an empty room with yourself about how you're really interested in getting one of those retro scale extric things. Oh, I used to play with those when I was younger. Do you remember the scale extric? Used to have one of those. Great, yeah, the little guns racing the blue car and the red car. Within 25 minutes, you'll go onto your computer and you will get an ad for one of those blooming things. They're listening. Not people. Artificial intelligence is listening. And it will listen for trigger words. And in the very short term, when it hears the trigger words, it will shadow ban that program, or shadow ban that podcast, or shadow ban that rant that you might do on YouTube. It'll shadow ban it. So you put it up there on YouTube. Brilliant. I've got it out there. And you see that after a while, you look and you go, wow, I used to get higher figures than that. Maybe it's me. Maybe I've just become shite. And you find out that you might have become shite, but not that shite. It's been shadow banned. They're preventing people from seeing it. And that's just the beginning of it. The next step from that is saying to independently produced content creators, you can't do that anymore. Why can't I? What about free speech? Well, you can't, because you can't just be saying stuff about geoengineering. Why? Because it isn't happening. Prove that it's not happening. I don't have to prove that it's not happening. You're scaring people by saying that sort of stuff. So we've got to impose on you a license. And the terms of the license are, you can't be saying stuff like that because it's untrue. Well, how do you know that it's untrue? Prove to me that it's untrue. I don't have to. That's where we're going. We're going to take a quick break. It's Thursday's Richie Allen Show. Maria Heller joins me. Live from Arizona. Great lady. Maria.net. One of those shows that I do listen to on a regular basis. She joins me. I should have turned down the volume of my phone as well. She joins me live in about 90 seconds time. Don't go anywhere.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Right, welcome back. It's 10 minutes past the hour, 10 minutes past 6, Thursday's programme, the 4th of October 2018. Let me just remind you, before I say a quick hello to Maria, I will be with you tomorrow at 1pm UK time live. That's 1pm UK time tomorrow. That's in lieu of Monday. And I'll have a news roundup for you. And then I'll be joined by Mark Windows. Mark, I used to know from TPV, windowsontheworld.net. Really good guy is Mark. Speaking of people that I was fortunate enough to get to know during my time in London, my next guest is no stranger to you, and she's somebody whom I love listening to, and I make time to listen to her because she's worth listening to. And her programme is the oldest one on the internet, the first podcast. You can find it at maria.net, that's M-E-R-I-A.net. Check it out if you haven't before and share it with other people. Let's welcome back to the show, live from Arizona, my friend and colleague Maria Heller. Maria, welcome back.
Hi, Rich. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's been about 4 months. Thanks for coming back. A lot has happened in the meantime to both of us,
God.
I think.
It's been a Every month. Day is like a year.
And I've never been able to get out of my head the Planet of the Apes, which you... It's one of your catchphrases that you've been using for years. It is a crazy word. And I want to talk about something very serious with you that's going to trigger a lot of people. But also, I don't get to call the shots. You can bring up and introduce anything you want. Maria.net, M-E-R-I-A.net. Check it out. Subscribe to Maria's show. I recommend it. I don't recommend much. You do know that. I want to talk about the word obtuse, willfully obtuse or willfully ignorant. I'm kind of stunned. Now, you and I have known each other for a few years. And if anything characterises me, it's that I gave up on political parties a long time ago. I was very disillusioned. I was a trade unionist and a socialist. I began to understand in the late 90s, early 2000s, that it didn't matter where I gave my vote. And I rejected it. And I'm neither left nor right like yourself. And I have no interest in any of them. And
right.
I'm stunned at the willful ignorance of people who blindly give their allegiance to Donald Trump and would have you believe, and me and our listeners, that the man is on some sort of crusade to protect children from paedophiles. Now, when I say when I say willfully obtuse, what annoys me about that is that Trump is a man who numbers amongst his friends, and still does, people like the Clintons, child traffickers, people like Jeffrey Epstein, a convicted paedophile. I could mention others, but
He's actually a convicted sexual predator.
A convicted sexual predator. A man who ran flights in and out of places that we know all about. Flights that Bill Clinton was on. And they want you to believe, and I've done a bit of research today because I saw that you were engaged in a conversation with one or two people on Twitter about this guy and about Trump. And I did a little bit of research today, and what I found was that from as early back as you want to go, right through Trump's career as a, let's call him an estate, let's call him a real estate developer, a casino manager, a organizer of beauty pageants, he's been accused of abusing people, sexually abusing people, having sex with minors. And alongside all of that are a number of proven statements that are not made up by the fake news media, but statements that Trump himself has made about people, about women. What will it take for people to understand that it doesn't matter whether it's Clinton, whether it's Bush, Bernie Sanders, I shouldn't say Bernie Sanders when we're talking about the Clintons and the Bushes and Trump. But why are they so obtuse about Trump, knowing the history of that man? Why, Maria?
Well, you have to understand, for the past four decades, the Christian wrong, as I like to call them, the Christian right, has been trying to load the Supreme Court with conservative justices so they can install biblical law. You know, one of the first shows I did 19 years ago was on dominionism and speaking about how they actually have ready to go a new constitution based on biblical law. And, you know, when you look at, you know, and they'll accept what I believe, you know, Trump is truly the Antichrist. They'll accept him as long as they get the court the way they want so they can take America back to the Stone Age and have their Christian theocracy. And I know you've probably been following this Kavanaugh hearing, which is, you know, 24/7 in the news here, where I'm like sick to my stomach over it. But over the past 2 months, I've gotten banned for 30 days, which I'm currently still on a 30-day ban from Facebook. The first ban was because I actually posted the facts that the worst thing about Kavanaugh isn't the fact he's a drunken pig, but the fact of who he's backed by, and he connects all the way to the Knights of Malta. As soon as I put that article up, within a second, Facebook immediately put up the box, you're banned for 30 days.
Wow. And you weren't having a go at anybody. You weren't in an argument with anybody. You just put some information out there.
And
exactly. It was,
and, you know, people have to realize Kavanaugh will be the fifth Roman Catholic on the Supreme Court. So think about all these cases against the Catholic Church for pedophilia with five Roman Catholics connected to the Jesuits and Opus Dei on the Supreme Court. Now, one of the writers here in America that I really respect is Wayne Madsen. I don't know if you've ever had Wayne on your show.
He's been on, and he came on through you. I met Wayne through you a couple of years ago. He has been on. I like Wayne a lot, yeah.
Okay, but, you know, Wayne Madsen had put out a great article, too, talking about the high school that Brett Kavanaugh went to, Georgetown Preparatory High School in Bethesda, Maryland, which has been a hotbed for Roman Catholic sex abuse of minors. So if you put a fifth Roman Catholic on the Supreme Court, his decisions on these cases, the cover-up of child sex abuse by religious organizations and powerful white men, will dictate for years the issue of sex abuse on minors.
Wow.
Now, here in America, we've got 15,000 children locked up in cages under Trump, something like 5,000 of them missing. Where are those children going? Are they going to end up like in the Franklin cover-up under George Bush Sr., where they go into the pedophile ring?
What do we mean
to
by locked up in cages, Maria?
This is more important than, you know, Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford. This is way bigger than Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford.
Of course it is. And that's what I suppose, what do you mean by 15,000 locked up in cages?
We have 15,000 immigrant children in concentration camps in America. When Trump decided to split these kids from their parents, 5,000 of them were disconnected from their parents, which looks like it could be forever because they admit they had no tracking system to connect these kids to their parents. So here we have Melania Trump over in Africa handing out white baby dolls to black children who are starving while her husband has interned all these children from infants on up, where you have two-year-old toddlers going before a judge and defending themselves. They don't even talk.
Yeah.
So this is what's happening in America. And if people think that, you know, the Supreme Court doesn't matter, you know, they're going to find out in a hard way that not only will the pedophile rings continue to be fed, but women's rights will go down the tubes in no time. I mean, today, women here in America, after 4 o'clock, are doing a general strike. So, you know, to me, yes, I understand this whole, you know, the juicy part of Kavanaugh versus Floyd, but people are also forgetting Kavanaugh managed to bring out his calendar from 1982, but he can't find 2 years of his records when he worked for George W. Bush. All right, he was the one, he was part to the Patriot Act. He's connected to Skull and Bones, secret societies, torture. He approved the torture under George Bush. And of course, no surprise to me, George W. Bush is out campaigning.
He's out campaigning for him, that's right. Now, Trump's supporters and Kavanaugh's supporters, in the interest of balance, they're not here. I'll be the devil's advocate just for a couple of minutes, even though, you know, I can't pretend that I have any time for any of them. I don't, but I'll be the devil's advocate. Trump supporters would say that it's also true. Now, I know you don't want to get bogged down in this, and you're right not to want to get bogged down in it, but Trump supporters would say, fair enough, Maria, he's got his calendar, but he can't remember this. They would say Ford can't remember how she got to the party. She can't remember what she did afterwards. They would say there are all sorts of memory gaps there as well. You see, we live in, these are times of whataboutery, right? It drives me up the wall. Whataboutery, what about? But in that instance, it's a fair question. Her story is full of gaps and holes as well.
Well, here's the thing. Because I too, and I, you know, listen, since this started, I've been doing an independent poll, talking to women wherever I go, asking them if anything like this ever happened to them. I so far have not met one woman who has said no.
Right.
And myself included. Now, I can tell you, I remember the assaults. I don't remember who it was, where it was, what it was for some of them. Some I remember as clear as day. But the other thing is Kavanaugh, Ford passed a polygraph test. Kavanaugh refused one. Kavanaugh refused an FBI investigation. If you're innocent, like Trump, then why not allow the investigations? And the investigation we got is as big a phony as Trump is. And of course, when you have an abuser in office, a woman abuser, a rapist, and a pedophile in office, he, of course, is defending every pedophile rapist from Roy Moore to, you know, and I'm not saying Kavanaugh was a rapist, but maybe given a little more time, he would have finished the deed. But you have to understand, these are the rich white cliques that are all connected to the Federalist Society, including Kavanaugh. The most important name people should Google after this show is Leonard Leo. Okay, this was my second ban on Facebook. Okay. Leonard Leo is a Catholic fundamentalist who already put three of these Catholics on the Supreme Court, Alito, Roberts, and Gorsuch. He's also the one backing Kavanaugh. He's also the one in his organization, which is an extreme right wing of the Catholic Church, that blocked Merrick Garland from being on the Supreme Court. And he's totally connected to the Christian right. Leonard Leo, that's a name most people have not heard. No one has brought it up in the Kavanaugh case. None of the experts, even people I respect their body of work, are covering what's important. They're taking sides, he said, she said, which has the least of what's going on.
But you know why that is, though. You've been around longer than me. You know we have entered the realm of the new paradigm, which is that facts don't matter. Facts are obsolete now. It only matters what you feel. And if you feel that Donald Trump is your Lord and Savior, if you really believe that Trump was sent to uncover the deep state and to infiltrate the deep state, if you really believe that, it doesn't
Trump
matter.
Trump is the deep state.
Well, this is right.
Trump,
of course,
is
he
is the deep state. Look, he just got exposed yesterday. Look, Richie, you know, a lot of your listeners might not know. Not only have I done all this research on things like most of them I never wanted to know, but I'm damn good at it. But I also grew up in New York, only 3-4 years difference in age from Donald Trump. So all New Yorkers that grew up in New York always knew his family were criminals. We always knew they were racist. We always knew they were con men. And, you know, for us, it's not shocking because I've watched his career.
Yeah.
You know, today Trump is out there yesterday saying how this is ruining young boys' lives. You know, any young boy has to be afraid. No, only young boys like Trump and his children. But Trump forgets that when the Central Park Five story came out in New York, Trump took out a full-page ad basically convicting those five young black men. They were later found, after serving 5 to 10 years apiece in prison, to be innocent. Until today, Trump says they're still guilty. So Trump literally ruined those five young black men's lives. And now he's worried about the elite white boys getting their lives ruined.
It's identity politics.
The ridiculousness is off the charts.
It's madness. It's identity politics. And again, it speaks to this new era where facts are irrelevant. I've called it a post-fact world. That's what it is. I'm going to give just another... Faisal is listening to this, and he makes a point that differs from us and from what we've been saying. Faisal says the Kavanaugh thing is weird. On the one hand, he's a Bush flunky. On the one hand, and an objectionable choice on that front. But the ridiculous accusations almost make him look good. Listen to this, Maria. A very convoluted double bluff, in my opinion. How interesting. He's not saying for a minute that Kavanaugh's a good guy here, or that he hasn't done things that, you know, he shouldn't have done. But he's saying, you know, make some accusations against him that are patently ridiculous. And then, you know, by the double bluff, you make him look like he's a victim.
Well, if it was so ridiculous, why was he screaming and crying like a baby?
Yeah.
All right, he showed himself to be as unfit as Trump is unfit. And yet everybody seems to be okay with it, which goes back to Planet of the Apes.
Let me ask you
this.
It's
like we're living in a twilight zone. Listen to me.
Yeah.
I thought that Dr. Ford was very credible. He did expose himself as being unfit for the job just by his temperament. But to me, the whole story is obfuscation. Look at the information I just gave you that no one's talking about.
Yeah, because it doesn't
the
matter, Maria.
The Bar Association 12 years ago didn't want to give him a seat on a court. They had already refused him. They said he was immovable, stubborn, and frustrating to deal with, and very sanctimonious. And the truth of the matter is he's never tried one case. Let's put him on the Supreme Court. Okay. And look, you know, I have no respect for the Supreme Court. In 2000, the Supreme Court destroyed America in everybody's face by picking George Bush as president.
Yeah.
They discounted everybody's vote in this country. And now we have this America.
Not that Al Gore would have been any better, but you're absolutely right.
Right. But remember, the Supreme Court's argument was if we allow a recount, it would be detrimental to George Bush.
That's right, yeah.
So they damn well knew he lost. And that goes back to 9/11. You know, when I gave my lecture on 9/11, which people can still find on YouTube, I reminded the audience, and I constantly do this, remember 9/12. And everybody says, what are you talking about, Maria? What about 9/12? Well, 9/12 was the day that the consortium of newspapers that went and did the recount in Florida were going to announce the results. So 9/11 happened and everybody backed down and let's throw our weight behind the president. So when Bush said he hit the trifecta that day, he certainly did, because it legitimized him and stopped us from knowing the results of the recount, which was supposed to come out on September 12th.
Do you know, I was covering this in Ireland on Irish radio. Now, back then, I didn't have any idea about conspiracies or any of that. I had no idea. But I was covering this, and we were laughing in our newsroom. I remember laughing. Now, I shouldn't have laughed, but I laughed. I sat there with my presenter, who's dead now, rest in peace, Billy McCarthy, and we laughed ourselves silly at the madness of the 2000 presidential election. That Bush could have a cousin working at Fox News who could call the election for Florida. He could say Florida has gone to George Bush, that his brother was the governor, that Catherine Harris went to Texas and used a firm there to wipe all these African Americans off the polls, and that they could get away with it.
And they're still doing it. They wiped off about 500,000 black people in Georgia just for these midterm elections. Nothing has changed. 20 years later, nothing has changed. They don't want to fix the system because the system was set up this way.
You know what I'm tired of, Maria? Do you know what I'm tired of more than anything? And I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, pucker up, buttercup. You're going to say to me, you've been doing this longer. Don't be telling me you're tired. That's what you're going to say to me. I'll tell you what I'm tired of. This crap whataboutery. What about Clinton? the idea that we have been reduced to this level of childishness, that just because we talk about the crimes of George Bush, that we must somehow be supporting liberal or left-wing parties. It is insane. You have spent years exposing the Clintons. And what they've done.
Look, we already dealt with that devil. We've got to deal with the devil we have now. You know, how many, what are we going to beat ourselves to death? I've covered them to death, the Bushes, the Clintons, with all the world's best experts. And look, you know, people can get mad at me. Don't get mad at me. Do the homework I do. All right. I posted this morning. I'm just the messenger. Okay.
Absolutely.
I don't want to feel like I'm Joan of Arc getting burned at the stake, but it feels like that every day.
The narcissism is so bad.
For whatever reason, as a true patriot, I can't stop doing what I'm doing.
You have to call it out, Maria. Here's the question. Let's get back to the misdemeanors and the very sordid stories that have surrounded Trump for years. The most serious one, of course, which you covered extensively and I followed with great interest. I didn't get into it too much because I wanted to hear what everybody else was saying. But it still kills me today that it's just gone away. I'm talking, of course, about Jeffrey Epstein's party planner, Tiffany Doe, who went on the record to say that she basically procured teenage girls, 14, 15, sometimes 13, for parties that Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein were present at. Now, nobody can convince me that, and look, I'm not naive, that, you know, that this woman wasn't serious. I believe this woman was serious. What's happened to this woman, Maria? And what's happened to those claims?
Well, she was threatened. She was threatened as a child after she was raped on Orgy Island. She was threatened by Trump, and he basically told her, if you tell anybody, I'll kill your whole family. You know, remember, Trump thinks he's a real wannabe gangster, which he'll never be. You know, he doesn't have the class to be a real gangster. But, you know, women are frightened. And when you threaten them, you know, look, I have children. When my kids were small, I told them, because, I mean, this stuff's always gone on. I told them, if anyone ever touches you anywhere you don't feel comfortable, I want to know about it. And they may tell you, don't tell, because we'll kill your mother or your father. That's not true. You need to tell me. And, you know, a few years later, maybe my son was about 6 or 7 years old. He came home from school crying. And when I finally got out of him why he was crying, I found that his music teacher was molesting these kids on the way out of the classroom. And, you know, and he, you know, he was into grabbing their asses. All right, I'll make it very clear.
Yeah.
Well, I called the school principal and I said I wanted that guy fired. And, you know, their answer was, oh, Mr. So-and-so wants to talk to you. Can you come in and talk to him? I said, the only way I'll talk to him is with a baseball bat.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? It was the last complaint they needed to fire that teacher. So I wasn't the only one. And that was my son, not my daughter.
And the bastards were happy to hear all these complaints and still keep him in his job.
Well, it's like the police. You know, you got a bad cop, they move him to another precinct. It's like the church. You got a filthy priest, a pedophile, they move him to another church.
Yeah.
You know, this pedophile ring goes deep. And, you know, people can research, you know, not only Leonard Leo, and you know how many times I'm going to mention that name, but also research the Franklin cover-up,
yes,
the pedophile ring that was going on inside the White House while George Bush Sr., who, you know, was in the White House.
Lawrence E. King, of course, the Franklin Credit Union, of course.
I mean, you know, when Bush Jr. was in office, they were sneaking in male prostitutes. Okay, I mean, people just don't want to believe. They want to believe the myth of America. But as I posted to, I believe, one of your listeners this morning, I said, listen, we can never understand the mind of a sociopath because we're normal people. But sociopaths don't act and think like we do. Remember Trump with his own daughter. If she wasn't my daughter, I'd be dating her. Isn't my daughter hot? Most of the women that he's cheated on or, you know, raw dogged are, you know, he tells them, you look like my daughter. You remind me of my daughter. I wouldn't put it past him if he's incested his own child. You know, I don't put anything past any of these people because they are not normal. Okay. I was just having a discussion with one of my friends on the phone today. He was very distraught over the news. And I said, listen, this whole world is run by demons. And the sooner you accept the fact these are not regular human beings, the sooner you'll be able to deal with it.
He is the establishment. That's what you said about 10 minutes ago. He has
absolutely
numbered among his friends over the years the presidents, the half a dozen of the last presidents, people like Jeffrey Epstein, the royal family here. People don't know a lot about that, but I'm talking about certain members of the royal family. Epstein, of course, he said things that are that can't just be ignored. People might say it's circumstantial, but nobody says that kind of thing about their daughter. Nobody thinks of their daughter in a sexual way.
Who kisses their daughter with their eyes closed?
Yes,
okay?
You don't think.
I saw that picture of him kissing his daughter with his eyes closed. I want to vomit. Okay. And I'm like, who does this? Okay. Normal people don't do that. Maybe I was lucky to have a normal father. But I look at this and it's like, how do people not see it? You know, and when you look at his wife, you know, she's just as bad as he is.
Do you know something,
Maria?
How
many more women have to come forth? How many more women does she have to see he was banging while she was pregnant and having his baby?
His wife said he raped her years ago, if I remember,
ago. That was Ivana, his first wife. And you know what? Anybody can look up their divorce papers, which Trump tried desperately with Michael Cohen to never have released. But they are available online. When you read the story of how he physically abused, at the same time raped Ivana, you want to throw up on the floor. Now, if that's the kind of man that these Christians are okay with as president, guess what? You're not a Christian.
This is a Jesuit thing, is it? It is, isn't it?
Well, I was surprised that the Jesuit magazine this week, which is America Magazine, that's what it's called, they actually called for Kavanaugh to withdraw from the nomination. Now, when you have a Jesuit magazine telling you to step down, my feeling was the reason they did that is they don't want the connections between him and the Jesuits and Opus Dei revealed. And it was obvious to me when I got an instant ban as soon as I posted the Knights of Malta and their connection to him. So, you know, the Jesuits is another topic. Very few, if any, alternative news people have ever had the courage to cover. I covered them years ago.
Well, it's only through you and what I say, the usual suspects, it's not derogatory. The usual suspects are the people I have respect for. It's only you and people will know who I'm talking about that I came to read about that and understand that and get my head around it. And I'm the first to admit that. I'm just open to hearing about anything. Maria Heller is our guest. Maria.net, MERIA.net. Trump supporters will be spitting feathers listening to this. And they will say, well, he's doing the right thing about migrants. They see, this is, let me just, before you come back in, let me just say this. This is the ridiculous, immature, adolescent level of debate that we have in 2018. Because they don't want to listen to the fact that, yes, I have seen at first hand what unfettered migration has done to public services in the United Kingdom. It's a bad thing. It's a terrible thing. However, we wouldn't have it if we weren't blowing up Yemen and if we weren't blowing up Syria and Afghanistan and Iraq and Libya.
Exactly.
We wouldn't have millions of people with nothing and nowhere to go, number one. But yes, migration is devastating for the poorest people in any society. No doubt about that. But, it's, you know, African-Americans, poor whites, they're suffering because of it. So they say, what about that? What about he's right. Yeah, okay, we can talk about that all day, but that doesn't excuse the, as you described them, we have them here as well, these detention centres where you have people in limbo whom are not just scumbags who snuck into a country. Their home is smouldering and their children and their own parents are buried underneath it.
Well, it's easier
not
to talk
Mexicans.
About the migrants than to talk about the illegal wars.
Yeah, and it's not just Mexicans. They want you to think that it's Mexicans. It's always Mexicans. It's not just Mexicans. You're talking about people.
Well, here, listen, if there's going to be anywhere, you're going to see that in Arizona. But the truth of the matter is, over the last decade, less and less people are coming into Arizona from Mexico and going back to Mexico. America's got nothing to offer, okay? That's the way I see it. We don't have jobs here for our people. You know, they're working three part-time shitty jobs for minimum wage trying to get by. So, you know, the American dream is now the American nightmare, and everybody knows that, except Trump fans. They really believe he's making America great again.
Yeah, all these people who used to talk about Israel being the pariah of the world in the Middle East, now they're not saying anything about it.
Because, right, well, Israel's no saint either, but, you know, we talk about the Zionists. But what people don't realize is the Zionists have to answer to the Jesuits. So they know some, but they don't know enough. Okay. And I would suggest everybody read the book Vatican Assassins by John Phelps. And I had the courage to read the whole book, and it was huge, and the courage to put him on my show. But when you read it, you'll learn that there was a Jesuit even at the helm of the Titanic when it went down.
Oh, some story that, yeah, I know that story, yeah.
So it's an eye-opener, yeah,
One of the greatest insurance frauds of all time, but also a massive sacrifice where people were killed.
Well, it wasn't just an insurance fraud. People have to understand that was right when they were supposed to vote on the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
And all the men that were going to vote against it just happened to be on that ship.
Quite a lot of them, that's right, yeah.
And as soon as that ship went down, they approved the Federal Reserve, which was the end of America.
Woodrow Wilson, yeah, who years later said it was a mistake. Well, duh. Lovely.
Yeah, triple duh.
Triple duh. Thanks for doing that. Thanks for handing the economy and everything over to a bunch of bankers. How kind of you.
And now we have a president who's just been busted having screwed taxes on tax fraud with his father's business, his business, for over $500 million in taxes.
Listen to
this. I remember when Trump was campaigning, he said he doesn't pay tax because he's smart.
Yeah.
But people have a short memory. You know, they seem to like his sickening personality, although I think a lot of people in those audiences are paid to be there because they all look as dumb as a rock. Interesting, they're all white, too. But, you know, people are still going to say, oh, we like his personality, when he's the most buffoonish person I've ever seen in my life.
Well, he's the biggest idiot that's ever given a speech anywhere. Do you know what? Do you know what they've done? The anger that exists in society is genuine, and there are great reasons for it, and it is righteous anger. But most people, including me up until a few years ago, don't have any idea. So people are bewildered. They're angry. And what they've done with the absolute goon that is Donald Trump, they've given people an outlet for that anger. It's wonderful. Because now you can stand there and scream along with him and scream abuse and believe all that bullshit that he's there to dig into the deep state and drain the swamp and all that crap. And
right, when everybody is a swamp. Everybody in this administration's a swamp. How many of them are already found guilty? By Robert Mueller. How many of them already going to jail? You know, nobody's talking about that in December, Michael Flynn gets sentenced. You know, the Michael Cohen story. Everything went away with this Kavanaugh story.
And he couldn't,
so I always dig through the news to find what else is happening while this distraction is going on.
And he puts the walrus next to him, John Bolton. I mean, what when he appointed Bolton, I naively, and this will tell you how naive I still am, Maria, I went, well, that's it, brilliant, game over now. Surely even his most ardent vocal supporters will go, Jesus Christ, Donald, what are you doing? And they didn't. They loved him even
Americans
more.
Americans are very stupid. They're overworked, they're overdrugged, they're on too many medications. They don't pay attention. They've forgotten that it was not a hint that to keep our democracy, we had to have an informed citizenry, that it was our duty to be informed. I do the best I can with the news and letting people get informed, but I can't force people to support my work or to listen. I do what I do for me. Where it falls, it falls. Some people get it, some people don't. They're not my responsibility.
No, you've just got to keep putting out an alternative point of view, a different side of it.
It's not a point of view. It's a well investigated. I will never say anything.
I know you won't
back up.
By the way, but this is where you and I, if we don't have a disagreement, I love you. I love the brashness of you. Oh. I love the I love the genius of you. But I still like to use the more moderate language because I think I'll give you a laugh, Maria. I used to be as definite as you. Now, I'm not saying you're wrong. You're right in what you're saying today. But I've learned, and maybe it's different for different people, what and I've given advice to people, what I do, and it's not to be patronising, I mean it, I've learned how to say, it could be argued, rather than, this is a fact. I think.
Right. Remember, we didn't have alternative facts till we had an alternative president. We didn't have the term fake news, which now countries and other dictators around the world are using, until we had Trump. So whoever Trump is serving, and I truly believe it is Russia and Israel, number one and number two, he's doing a good job of destroying America from the inside out, which is something I also covered 18 years ago on my show with Robert Galen Ross, when we talked about how they wanted to destroy America from the inside out. And now we're living through it.
I look at Russia, and I, of course I'd argue with you there. I don't see Russia as a state, even though it's run by a bunch of gangsters. Of course it is. Every country in the world is. I don't see it as a threat, at least not in terms of, you know, any sort of global conflict. And I think obviously what Russia is doing in Syria is the right thing. But I'm going to say something to kind of endorse some of what you just said there. I've obviously been disgusted to see, to learn in the last few months that Benjamin Netanyahu made several visits to Moscow to meet with Putin. And that flied in the face of what we were supposed to believe, which was that the Russian government was at loggerheads with Israel because of what Israel is doing in Syria. And you look at that and you think, well, they should be sworn enemies, Russia and Israel. And yet Putin was happy to give the nutty one plenty of audiences this year alone, a half a dozen times.
And when he didn't get his way with Putin, what did he do? He came to the United States and talked to Trump about it, thinking Trump could fix the problem for him.
Unbelievable.
People have to get, these people are all in league together. All we get is bad theatrics. You know, when you look at the Jeff Flake, you know, we need an investigation, but today Jeff Flake is going to vote for Kavanaugh. I just wrote, this is all theatrics. That's all we get is theater. And it's not even good theater. So, you know, people can either pay attention to what's going on besides that or get sucked into hating each other and whipped up like they intend for people to get, or whipped up against each other.
What are we going to do about that? I can't see a way out of it. The narcissism, I don't blame people for the narcissism. You look at the Trump fans, and then you look at the lunatics who think that Hillary Clinton is some sort of model for women, they're just as bad. And I think they're not open to hearing what they're doing now through social media. And I know we could talk about the vaccines and the chemtrails, we could talk about all that. They are cocooning themselves against any opinion that differs from theirs. You can't, I don't even want to say you can't get through to people. It's not my job to get through to people or impose my vision of the world on them. I see it as my job to say to them, hey, listen, before you make your mind up, just have a listen to this or have a look at that. But you can't do it because it's put your hands over your ears now and go, la, 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 la. I'm not listening.
You know, listen.
No matter what.
I live in a very Republican state, in a very Republican town. And 3 years ago, before this madness started, everybody at my gym is, as they call themselves, dyed-in-the-wool Republicans. And they all, you know, we all had some little sparring going on during the campaign. But I will tell you this, Richie, over the past year and a half, when I walk into the gym, they're all waiting for me to hear my opinion on what's going on. And they're laughing at the news. They are so upset and so disgusted with this administration. It took me a while, but I earned all their respect.
May I ask, we're talking about a different generation, because I think amongst people my age and older, 40-somethings, 50-somethings, we come from a time when our ideas were challenged and robustly challenged, and we had to robustly defend them without getting, without melting down. I mean, you could come on here any night you want and have a go at me over my opinions and really get stuck into me. I'm never going to fall out with you. I'll go, fair enough, that's how you think, Maria. Our generation, yeah, but the generations before us, not to be beating up on younger people all the time, but I'm guessing your friends, people roughly from your generation, right? More or less.
These people at my gym, believe me, I'm like a teenager there. They're in their 70s and 80s.
Right. They're used to.
So they've been Republicans their whole lives. And yet they are up in arms against this administration. the very same people that said they were dyed-in-the-wool Republicans and they were going to vote for Trump, regardless of what I told them. And now I don't ever give them that I told you so, because that never accomplishes anything.
Not at all.
But now we can all laugh together. And I like the fact they ask for and respect my opinion on the news every day.
Well, it's great to be humble, isn't it? I mean, it's a great thing to be humble. I'm constantly reminding myself that I would have been very mainstream and very dogmatic when I worked in commercial radio. Now, you, my friend, you worked in commercial radio yourself. Both of us have we very similar career paths, you and I. And you're a commercial radio presenter, a very successful presenter. I would have been very dogmatic back in the day, you know, against conspiracy researchers. Yeah, you're an idiot. I would have been like that. So I try and have a bit of humility now. And when people are saying to me, oh, you're just a bullshitter and you hate Trump and you follow Jeremy Corbyn, which is nonsense, I can't stand Corbyn either. Rather than get annoyed, I'm just try and be a bit humble. I say, well, look, hang on a second. I used to think like that. Now I'm wide open to everything. Listen to everything.
Look, not everything is a conspiracy. And just because things are a false flag doesn't mean people didn't get killed either. And that's an issue I've had with other hosts, other co-hosts, other intelligent people. But when I see intelligent people jumping on, and I watched it, Richie, and it was frightening to me, jumping on the I'm going to vote for Trump, Trump's better than Hillary bandwagon, the same people that I covered stolen elections with for, 10 years, I was like, are you kidding me? Are you like falling into this cesspool of thinking that one party's better than the other? I mean, I have been surprised. I've been surprised by some people, and I will have to unfortunately say they're all men, who have sided with Kavanaugh from the beginning and get trapped in that. But when I present the facts like I did in the earlier part of your show, I get no response from these people. So it's disheartening, but it doesn't stop me from doing what I do.
And nor should it, and it won't ever stop you from doing what you do. Yeah, it's disheartening. The silence is indicative of the person is thinking, well, I'm just going to ignore that.
That means they got sucked into the matrix. They bought the very same scheme that they were arguing against for years.
But they fell
into it, and I don't even understand that.
I do,
when people said to me, Hillary or Trump, I said, what do you mean? That's like AIDS versus cancer.
Yeah, but you had that knowledge, and you had that skill, and you had years of looking at it. I understand why so many fell for the Trump thing. Our mutual friend Jim Fetzer, God love Jim. Jim was all for him. I mean, it was amazing. I remember back in the day. And our other great mutual friend, may he rest in peace wherever he is, the genius Jim Mars. What a genius. I had a great row with Jim, of course, which ended friendly, of course, on a programme about Trump, when Jim was convinced that Trump was genuine. And I understand why, because Clinton and her husband are the devil incarnate.
Right, but they're also pals and I think distant cousins of Trump.
Right, that's right.
They've gone to each other's weddings. They partied together on Orgy Island with Jeff Epstein. People do we only get theater, okay?
Yeah.
The fake lock her up. That's never going to happen any more than lock him up. It's just never going to happen. This is like fodder for the plebs on the street. And to them, we're all useless feeders.
And the sooner people start waking up to that fact, the sooner that something can be done about it. That was about the quickest 40 plus minutes that I've had for a long time. It's just flown by. Listen, we'll. It's been a mad few weeks for me. I had nearly a month off and mad stuff going on, car crashes and everything.
Yeah, I've been following you. Feeling better, Richie.
Yeah. I'd love to be one of these crazy truthers and, make up a big story about how the MI5 tried to kill me and all that lies. But no, a very bad woman driver, Heller. A bad woman driver tried to kill me. That's what it was. Folks, Maria Heller, everything that woman says, this woman, this great woman, she means. Completely 100% independent, backed by nobody. Her opinions are hers and hers alone. If you haven't, check...
Only my subscribers. And, if you guys listening like my show, please support it, because I don't have any corporate money. I don't have any censorship. I'm not selling you anything. I'm just giving you the news. And let me tell you, Richie, when I hang up with you, I have about an hour and a half of news to report on my show.
You've got to produce your own show now. And you took the words out of my mouth. I say it all the time. When you identify completely independent and honest and journalism with integrity, you've got to support it. Go to mariamerie.net, check out our program and support it. If you listen to it, and it doesn't matter, if you're listening to an independent producer, an independent presenter regularly, you should be making a contribution, no matter how small it is. I'll be in touch
with... Absolutely, you too. For you too, Richie.
Well, thanks for saying that. And I'll be in touch with you next week, and we'll do this again next month with your permission. Great stuff today, Maria. Have a good show.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Catch you later. The brilliant Maria Heller, live from Arizona on Thursday's Richie Allen Show. I've got a 60-second break to take. When I come back, I'll be wrapping up. Don't go anywhere. Back in 60.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Welcome back is right. Welcome back, and we're just about to sign off. Don't forget, by the way, thanks Pippa King. It's at Pippa_King. Go to Google and, it's not the only search engine, but go to a search engine and look for biometrics in schools. Pippa_King on Twitter. Check her out, pippaking.blogspot.com. Maria Heller, M-E-R-I-A, .net. So it's Maria, M-E-R-I-A.net. Check out Maria. Big thanks to Maria Heller and to Pippa King. Thanks to you. Don't forget, I'm live tomorrow at 1 p.m. UK time. If you're on the east coast of the US, you'll be waking up to me. Breakfast time, 8 a.m. Eastern time. There, I'll be with you tomorrow. I'll have a half an hour of news, but with an alternative slant. And I'll be joined from London by my old pal, Mark Windows, who I've got a lot of time for. Mark will join me tomorrow as well. 90-minute show tomorrow between 1 and 2.30 UK time. In lieu of me not being with you on Monday, even though there was nothing wrong with me on Monday. Just a crazy, one of the maddest days I've ever had in my life last Monday. But there you go. I was half tempted to come on and just play music, to be honest, last Monday. But I thought, no, that would be lazy. Going out with Dire Straits, thanks for listening. Look after yourselves and one another. Back with you tomorrow at 1, as I said. Until then, bye now.
There's got to be a record of you someplace. You got to be on somebody's books. The lowdown picture of your face. You're injured. The sacred and profane, pleasure and the pain. Somewhere your fingerprints remain concrete, and it's your face I'm looking for on every street. Tattoo, silver spurs on his heel. See, what can I tell you as I'm standing next to you? She threw herself under my wheels, and it's a dangerous road and a hazardous load, and a firework.
flags over liberty exploding again. And it's your face I'm looking for on every street. Such a waste. Every victim.